This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bianculli, TV critic for the New York Daily News, sitting in for Terry Gross. Meg Wolitzer's novel, The Position, has just been published in paperback. The story begins in 1975, when four children, ages 6 to 15, discover a book written by their own parents called Pleasuring, One Couple's Journey to Fulfillment. It's a manual, kind of like The Joy of Sex, illustrated with sketches of the couple demonstrating the various positions. Wolitzer's novel follows these characters over the next three decades, as the couple divorces and ages and the children grow up and form their own relationships. Our book critic Maureen Corrigan wrote, "By its end, The Position turns out to be a poignant elegy to the fleeting health and pleasures of the body, as well as to the fleeting emotional and physical togetherness of the family." Meg Wolitzer's other books include Sleepwalking, Surrender Dorothy, and The Wife. Terry Gross spoke with Wolitzer last year. Let's start with a reading from the opening of The Position.
The book was placed on a high shelf in the den, as though it were the only copy in the world, and if the children didn't find it, they would be forever unaware of the sexual lives of their parents, forever ignorant of the press of hot skin, the overlapping voices, the stir and scrape of the brass headboard as it lightly battered the plaster, creating twin finial-shaped depressions over the years in the wall of the bedroom in which the parents slept or didn't sleep, depending on the night. The book sat among a collection of unrelated and mostly ignored volumes, Watership Down, Diet for a Small Planet, Building a Deck for Your Home, Yes, I Can, The Story of Sammy Davis Jr., The Big Anthology of Golden Retrievers, and on and on and on. It was casually slipped in, this one copy of the book that the parents brought into the house, for if they'd stored all their copies, including the various foreign editions, in taped-up boxes in the basement marked kitchenware or odds and ends, that would have sent a message to the children. Sex is filth. Or at least, if not exactly filth, then something unacceptable to think about anywhere except beneath a blanket, in pitch darkness, between two consenting, loving, lusty, faithful, married adults. This, of course, was not the view of the parents, who for a very long time had loved sex and most of its aspects, loved it so dearly that they'd found the nerve and arrogance to write a book about it. When they thought of their four children reading that book, though, they brooded about what kind of effect it would have on them over time. Would it simply bounce off their sturdy, sprouting bodies, or else be absorbed along with the fractions and canned spaghetti and skating lessons, the things that wouldn't last, wouldn't matter, or perhaps would matter, coalescing into some unimaginable shape and gathering meaning inside them? But the parents' concern was mostly overshadowed by confidence. So why not put the book on a shelf in the den, a high but reachable shelf where the children could get to it if they wanted to? And the chances were good that they would want to, and that no one would be struck dead by it, and life would just go on as it always had.
That's Meg Wolitzer reading from the beginning of her new novel, The Position. Of course, Meg, after the children do discover this book, life does not go on the way it always had. It really changes all of their lives. And I'm wondering what made you think about having this sex manual at the center of a book, and thinking about what the consequences might be for the children if the parents had written a sex manual.
Well, for me, reading The Joy of Sex when I was a kid was a pivotal moment. My sister and I took my parents' copy and went off and read it. And the thing that struck us at the time was that this couple, he looked kind of like Kris Kristofferson, Alan Bates, the sort of bearded look that was popular at the time.
Yeah.
And she was kind of closer to my mother's age than mine. It could be your parents. I mean, there was something about this couple that was adult, and it kind of gave you a little bit of an aperture into the world of adult sexuality, ready or not.
Excuse me for sounding dumb, but I actually never read The Joy of Sex.
Oh, well, you must.
Is it actually like photographs of people?
It's drawings.
It's drawings, like in the sex manual in your book.
Yeah.
Now, your mother is a writer, Hilma Wolitzer. And yes. I'm wondering, like, when you were young, did you come across sex scenes of hers? And what impact did that have on you?
Yes, that had an impact as well. I mean, these things all kind of came together in my mind to gestate for a long time until I wrote The Position. But when I was a teenager, in junior high school, actually, my mother sold her first novel, Ending, And it was a wonderful literary book, but it did have a pretty graphic sex scene in it. And I remember going to school that day, and a bunch of boys had a copy of the book. And they ran down the hallway shouting, "Read page 108, read page 108. And I pretty much went home to my mother and said, "Why couldn't you be a travel agent?" I mean, in the suburb where we lived, nobody's mother was a novelist. Everybody's mother was a travel agent or a real estate agent or a housewife. This was something pretty unusual that she did.
You know, so when the children discover the sex manual that their parents wrote and illustrated, it's not only kind of embarrassing and unsettling for them, it's also kind of baffling. Like one of the sons, Michael says, or Michael thinks, apparently no one could ever get enough of sex. It needed to be replenished again and again, filled up like a bucket in a well. It wasn't enough for people simply to have sex with each other. They also had to examine pictures of it and read about it and hear it described in agonizing and exhilarating detail. Do you think it would be baffling to a child finding one of these books to think, like, what? Why do they have to be so absorbed in it? Why don't I have to, like, read about it and write about it? And
yeah, because up to a certain age, it just simply seems disgusting. You know, I guess that's called latency, the period at which it really would kind of seem like this animalistic thing that has nothing to do with you. But of course, one day it will have everything to do with you. And I think maybe some part of your mind realizes that when you see it and you're appalled.
Now, one way of thinking about the impact such a sex book would have on the children of the parents who wrote it is that it would be sexually liberating, because it would mean they were growing up in a sexually open environment, that they got a good education from sneaking a peek at the book. But the book really becomes a burden to most of the children in your novel. And then as they grow up, this may or may not relate to the existence of the book, but as they grow up, they each have their own sexual issues. One of them is on antidepressants, and that's made him less sexually responsive and more sexually frustrated. One of the sons is gay, and nothing in the book speaks to his condition. One of the daughters feels so unattractive, she doesn't think anyone would ever think of her as sexual. And I just find it really interesting the way you use sex in the book to get at character and to get at how people's lives are shaped, the things that shape them, the way they turn out.
Mm-hmm.
Why did you want to use sex as the kind of organizing principle around the book?
Well, I wanted sex to sort of heighten all of the emotional drama in the book about childhood and growing up and coming into your own. I realized that I couldn't think of a book that dealt with the uncomfortable relationship between sex and family. Here we all are in a family, and the adults are sexual, and the kids are secretly becoming sexual and have to hide their feelings about sex and their experiences, and everyone's living under one roof. This is all going on, but for the most part, unless you're in one of those real, you know, hippie families that I did know of, it's not really discussed. So using sex essentially as a kind of catalyst or as a bomb, really, to sort of show how it's sort of too much exposure to sex in this family, the Mellow family, who I invented, sets off a lifetime of feeling. I think it just heightens what was already there. You know, Claudia, the younger daughter, who wants to stay trapped in, you know, wants to stay in childhood, not trapped in childhood. She wants to stay in childhood because her parents were the sexual ones. She feels so unattractive that she's saving her money as a child in a Pillsbury Doughboy bank, hoping to save it up so that maybe someday she can pay a man to love her. You know, sex belongs to the parents, not to her.
One of the things you get at in your novel is the reality of sex as compared to the way it's presented in romantic literature and erotic movies. And the reality of sex is different. What are some of the differences you want to get at in the book?
Well, it's often awkward. I mean, speaking from personal experience and from things, from discussions with others, but you don't really read that very often. It's a kind of navigation between people. If they're new to each other, there's a kind of shyness or awkwardness. There's a certain stylization that we see in so much of the media about sex. And in this book, each of the children, as they grow up, has to kind of find their way in the world of sex that the parents really trailblazed before them. And the illustrations of the parents actually making love, the illustrations were so, you know, beautiful and done in pen and ink so elegantly. How can the kids live up to that? How can any of us live up to that? Things go wrong. People fall off beds. Bodies don't fit. You know, all kinds of things happen in real life.
Well, one of the great things in your book is that the parents, the couple whose illustrations are in the book, in other words, the book has illustrations of them making love, this couple doesn't live up to their own illustrations. Let me just read another passage here. And this is basically about how absurd and silly looking the reality of sex can be. You know, at first this couple thinks that they should take pictures of themselves in the positions that they want to discuss in the sex manual. So they set up a camera on a tripod with a timer, and then the woman, the wife, looks at the photos, and here's what she thinks. As far as she was concerned, she was all double chin and breast, and Paul was a shapeless Monet haystack of body hair. Everything unattractive was accentuated, and everything at all appealing seemed to have been airbrushed out. Their bodies joined together in standard missionary sex looked grotesque, their faces screwed up in pain and courage, as though the act in which they were partaking was excruciating and required a sort of personal heroism in order to endure it.
Well, the idea of a book of pictures of you having sex is so horrible that I might have to faint right now even thinking about it. You don't mind if I do. I just think that that's the truer version of sex, really, if we're not Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie. You know, we're these human beings. And coming upon a book of your parents having sex in various positions, and I would like to say that the parents invent a position which they wanted to kind of give their book a certain cachet. And I really wanted to come up with the worst sort of 70s name that I could. And I spent a lot of time on this, and I came up with the name Electric Forgiveness. So the parents come up with some ridiculous position called that.
Meg, in order to write this book, you had to write about sex. And I mean, there isn't really all that much writing about the actual act, but there is some of it. And I'm wondering what it was like for you to get comfortable writing in a, you know, semi-explicit way about sexuality.
It took me a long time. I think that I look at my career over, you know, as this book and the last book, The Wife, I think are part of a sort of newer period for me and the period that I'm most interested in. I heard once long ago in a writing workshop, and I'm sure it's a famous line, write as though everyone you know were dead. And I think that's really the way to go. I mean, if you're writing for an audience, or if you're writing because you know your mother's going to read it and what will she say, what are you doing? Why are you writing? It's not that anything in here, in fact, is anything my mother of all people, would be upset by. But you start off writing to please someone. You start off writing to please your teacher or your mother or a friend or a lover. And then you have to abandon that, and you have to write what you want to write about. I started to think that men had been bolder sometimes writing about some of these issues. Philip Roth was a writer, is a writer I've always loved. And he just doesn't seem to care what people think. And I found myself stuck in a kind of writing class lyricism that I was getting upset about, in which there was very little drama and momentum. And I wanted to write more about things that mattered to me, about big things between people. And one thing between people is sex. And in this book, I wanted to sort of write about a kind of array of sexual lives.
What are some of the things you had to figure out in coming up with the right tone and language to actually write the more explicitly sexual parts of the book?
Well, you know, it seems to me that writing about sex is hard to do and usually pointless because we've all had sex. What are you going to tell me that's new? Are you telling me this to titillate me? I mean, I'm not Anais Nin. I don't want to do one of those Anais Nin Henry Miller jags. That's not what I'm after here. So if there was going to be a sex scene, it had to have a reason to be. I had to say to myself, why are you telling me this? And in each case, with the different characters, sex had a meaning that propelled the story forward and also gave us information about who they were.
As we've mentioned, your mother, Hilma Wallitzer, is a novelist, too. We talked a little bit about the impact of reading a sex scene in her book when you were young. But I'm interested in the broader impact it had on you to read your mother's books. At what age did you become interested in actually reading what your mother had written?
Very early, because I don't think I really understood it. Her first short story, which was published in the old Saturday Evening Post, back when they ran fiction, was called Today a Woman Went Mad in the Supermarket. And I seem to remember that it had a drawing of a woman in a supermarket with a very white face, putting her hand over her face. And for about a minute, I worried whenever we went to King Cullen that my mother was going to have a kind of breakdown in the market because I didn't understand what fiction was. But I got it as time went on. I mean, books and reading was so much a part of my relationship with her. We cried together over Charlotte's Web. When I saw her writing, I don't think I respected it at first. I mean, I would leave the house in the morning to go to school, and she'd be sitting there in a bathrobe with her hands poised above the keyboard of a Smith Corona. And I'd come home at the end of the day, and she'd be there in that bathrobe with her hands poised above the keyboard of the Smith Corona. And I wanted to say, you know, pull yourself together, woman. What is it to be a writer? It's a slow process of acceptance on the part of a child to realize that your parent is really doing something wonderful, being an artist. It was tremendously exciting. But again, kids do want their parents to be a little bit boring. And she had enough of that suburban stuff, making, salads in the shape of a girl's face and going on field trips, so that it wasn't like she was so bohemian. She really wasn't. I think that being around a writer when you're a child can be bad sometimes. My children, I think, sometimes wish that I did something else. Years ago, when my son was little, we were walking past a McDonald's, and there was a sign that said, now hiring. And he got all excited and said, look, Mom, look, maybe, you know, you could do this on the side. He wanted regular hours for me. He wanted a life that seemed stable. And I had to say to him, this is what you've got. I'm sorry. And I think that they've come to see that it's unusual and can be fun sometimes.
You know how, like, when you read a book by someone you know, you look to see, is any character based on you? Are there any secret messages here regarding how this writer actually feels about you?
Yeah.
So when you were reading, like, books by your mother, did you look for clues about how she really felt about you?
Oh, yes. In fact, there was a short story that she wrote, one of her early short stories in the New American Review, this wonderful literary magazine, in the 60s and 70s, and the character, a young unhappy mother again, is sitting on the side of a bathtub washing her son's hair, and she thinks, I don't love you, kiddo. And I remember reading that and feeling some kind of deep pang, but how could it be possible? You know, she had just worked all night on my costume for Peter Pan. How could it be possible? It can't be possible, which I think gave me a sort of early understanding, a precocious understanding of the way writers make things up. But I think the way ideas come about is so sort of circumlocuous. It doesn't come directly. You don't have to not love your child in order to write that scene. But everyone is filled with ambivalence, and that's really hard for kids to see, that their mother is ambivalent, is not just an all-good, benign cookie baker, has some dark moments, has some muttering times. And I think as kids get older, they see that that's okay. I began to love it and to really respect it in my mother that she was interesting, that she had this sort of wonderful talent that seemed to come out of nowhere. Back then, she was called a housewife turned novelist, as though she'd done this incredible transformation freakishly. It was so amazing to reviewers that a housewife could write a novel.
We talked a little earlier about the impact that this sex manual has on the children in the novel as they grow up. And we talked a little bit about what it was like when you were a girl to find that your mother had written a novel with a sex passage in it. You have two children. How will you feel when they read your book? Have you thought about that?
Yeah, it's come up a little bit. My 14-year-old son has asked if he could read it. And first I said no. And then I thought, oh, I see. The more I say no, the more I'm going to turn this into a hot object in some way. And I don't want to do that. I said to him, well, you know, I think you would enjoy other books of mine more. This one has some sex in it. I think it might be embarrassing to you. And then the conversation just sort of ended a little bit. I mean, I think the thing that always strikes me as funny is that the children of writers aren't all that interested, for the most part, in their mother or father's work. they're sort of interested in their own lives a lot more. But when they do kind of look up from their own self-absorption now and again, and they ask about it, I bring it up as a they bring it up as a possibility, and I sort of respond in a kind of vague way, which is not unlike the way the parents in my book sort of responded. They left the book around for the children to see. Now, I'm not an exhibitionist, and this book doesn't feature pictures of me having sex in it, but I think that it's important that he know that it's a novel and that this comes from the imagination, because I think that that's the thing that's kind of falling away, the idea that a book you can write is made up and that it's not a true thing, that it's fiction and it's a work of the imagination and their mother is really proud of it. But I certainly wouldn't, you know, ban it.
Meg Wolitzer, thanks so much for talking with us.
No, thank you.
Meg Wolitzer speaking with Terry Gross last year. Wolitzer's novel, The Position, has just been published in paperback.